Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, vinyl is now more popular than PlayStation games. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we are going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when, well, it's not a music industry story, but the Queen died, and that was quite a big story.
It is quite a big story, particularly here in this United Kingdom. It is actually a kingdom again, isn't it? This United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. I don't know about our listeners elsewhere in the world, although sometimes I do feel, particularly in the US, people follow the monarchy there sometimes more than we do. So yes,
and Canada. Wow.
So yes, Queen Elizabeth II died this week. Our job on this edition of Setlist, even though this isn't, as you've already said, music industry news, our job is to reference this at the start of this podcast without accidentally saying anything inappropriate and flippant. Can we do that?
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad that we're up to that test. So, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Obviously, I hope I speak for the vast majority of people living in the UK. It's obviously sad when anybody dies, particularly for the family and friends of the person who has died. And we are all sad in that way. It is a big event, I guess, because, you know, most people living in the country, both of us included. I mean, we've never known this country without there being Queen Elizabeth as the Queen in that slightly weird institution that is the British monarchy. So I guess in the year ahead, our money will change, our stamps will change, we will all not watch the King's speech on Christmas Day rather than the Queen's speech, and we will never, and this will have a big impact on your life, I know, Andy, we will never sing God Save the Queen ever again.
We might.
Well, it seems unlikely there's going to be a Queen in our lifetime.
Not in like an official capacity, but we might just, you know, sing it to ourselves at home sometimes.
That is true. You're not banned. So, yes, that weird thing, isn't it? For those people who are not in the UK, it is weird when events like this happen because they're still part of the population who are very, very, very pro-monarchy and particularly were, you know, are fans of the Queen in particular. Then there are the people who are very anti-monarchy. And then there's a big chunk of the population who are sort of just indifferent. But nevertheless, sad and a big event. And from a music perspective, well, it was quite interesting. I saw somebody on social media monitoring this, and I'm sure Private Eye will have a column on it in the next couple of weeks, of how you respond to an event like this if you're a brand on social media. And somebody I saw on Twitter was collating all the companies that were trying to acknowledge this major event, but it just seemed weird coming from, well, I think the one that people were, I assume it was genuine and it wasn't faked, was the National Kebab Awards had paid tribute. So obviously interesting in the music industry, lots of artists were commenting. I feel that it's possible that some people heard the sad news via Jedward. They were very quick to share the headline just after 6:30 p.m. on Thursday evening as it happened.
And then some people found out through the crazy frog, which that must be a weird thing to happen if that's how it happened to you.
So lots and lots of artists posting their sort of tributes to the Queen, their memories of the Queen. It was funny when we were reporting on this in the CMU Daily on Friday, and it's sort of like, well, should I just pick two or three artists' tributes? Does that seem weird? If so, who do I pick? But we did in the end. So we went for Elton John because obviously he has a link in history to the death of a significant royal in the past. That seemed relevant. We put Annie Lennox post because I actually thought Annie Lennox post was a nice little story, a memory. And then she was saying, you know, you might be very pro-monarchy, you might be very anti-monarchy, but, and I thought that what she wrote was quite nice. So yeah, lots of artists commenting, a handful of music in organizations were commenting. But of course, a big chunk of the music industry was in the Hammersmith Apollo in London as the announcement was made expecting dinner because it was the Mercury Prize award ceremony. Dinner was about to be served when the news came in. They cancelled the event because I think that was probably the right decision. It probably would not seem appropriate. Well, whoever won would have to go on stage and, well, it would seem a bit weird for them to be celebrating their album in the circumstances. Plus, of course, it was meant to be broadcast by both BBC TV and BBC Radio, and the entirety of the BBC switched over, as we expected, to coverage of the death of the Queen, so they wouldn't have been able to broadcast it. But I think there were, well, I saw one person posting that it was weird that in the wake of that big event happening in British history, big chunk of the music industry were squeezing into Hammersmith pubs, desperately trying to see if they could get some food because everyone was really hungry.
Yes. And of course, the Mercury Prize has experience of major events derailing its award show, having taken place on the 11th of September 2001, which did make that a somewhat somber event. So perhaps that was in their memories as well.
Yeah, that one went ahead, didn't it? And then was that the first time PJ Harvey won?
Yes.
And yeah, I think probably with hindsight, maybe that shouldn't have gone ahead. And so maybe that prompted the decision. As soon as I heard the news, well, it was rumours were circulating, weren't they, before the news was officially announced. But I used to do PR training with an organisation called the Taylor Bennett Foundation, with lots of people embarking on careers in PR and corporate communications. And most of my training were about how the media works, and I used to have a section discussing how the British media would respond to the death of the Queen and how, in a way, it's one of the easiest days for British newspapers and British broadcasters because everybody has all of their content pre-prepared for when that moment happens. So ever the media geek, as soon as the news was announced, I just wanted to know what the media were doing, how they were reporting it, and whether or not my predictions were right. So I tuned in to pretty much every radio station to see what they were doing. And that's why I can tell you that all the BBC stations were airing the same programme. Obviously, in the BBC Sounds app now, it's quite easy to jump around the stations. So whether it was 1, 2, 3, One Extra, Scotland, Asian Network, Radio Stoke, The World Service, they were all airing the same broadcast covering the death of the Queen. Meanwhile, with commercial radio, all the global stations owned by Global were interestingly playing the same output. So that would include Capital and Heart and LBC and Radio X. But the Bauer stations were doing it differently. Some were just playing slightly more somber music. Some were having news stories. Some, I'm not sure, had even got the memo. So it was interesting to see how the media responded. So a big event in Britain affected the music industry, but I think it's not necessarily appropriate to dwell too much on the impact on the music industry because that's very minor in the wider scheme of things. And therefore, for that reason, we're not really going to talk any more about that particular major event in the UK on this edition of Setlist.
No, later on, we will be discussing why Taylor Swift has had enough of experts. But first, the UK's Entertainment Retailers Association put out new figures last week showing that so far this year, vinyl albums have risen up the ranks to become the second most successful form of physical media in terms of revenues. In the first three quarters of 2022, LPs have been bringing in more money than CDs, DVDs, or even PlayStation games. It's now only Nintendo Switch games that stand in the way of vinyl taking on the number one position.
Yeah, so that's pretty big news, isn't it? For fans and sellers of vinyl everywhere, and yet more proof that vinyl's popularity remains high. The vinyl revival was not just a temporary little bit of hype. Of course, we've always said that the vinyl revival was here for the long term, and I would prefer it if no one goes back into the archives of Setlist to find the editions where we almost certainly said this can't continue forever. No, we never said that. We always knew that the vinyl revival was here in the long term. And yeah, so vinyl working its way up that chart helped, along, of course, in terms of its position on the chart of the most lucrative physical media, by the continued decline in the sales of both CDs and, in particular, DVDs, both of which have seen their revenues fall this year. So in the first 9 months of this year, the money coming in from the sale of CDs and DVDs was down on the equivalent period in 2021, while vinyl albums, the revenues generated by them in the first 9 months of this year compared to the first 9 months of 2021, they were up 12.2%, which is the biggest positive change in revenues recorded by ERA's figures for 2022 so far.
So that's all very exciting and positive, I think it's fair to say. Would it be bad if I now put in some caveats on this?
Well, it would be, but I have a suspicion that that's not going to stop you.
No, it won't. I mean, for one thing, as you say, these figures are for January to September, and don't, because the smart people amongst you will have noticed, they haven't happened yet. They don't include the final 3 months of this year, and it's Q4 where sales of physical media are always at their highest, thanks to good old Christmas, which is coming. You must have seen everything in the shops. So while these figures may give us an accurate representation of a trend that will continue to the end of the year, equally, they might not.
So you're thinking that maybe some of these other formats that have had a depressing first three quarters of 2022 are going to mount a comeback between now and Christmas?
Could happen. Secondly, it does seem like ERA has been a bit creative with these figures in order to make a good headline, that being vinyl has overtaken PlayStation games. Now, while that is correct, according to these figures, and a bit more exciting sounding than vinyl overtakes CDs and DVDs, ERA doesn't usually split games up by console. It normally announces console game revenues together as a whole. So actually, normally, PlayStation and Switch games would be lumped together and therefore would still be vastly out in front of vinyl.
Yeah, and if you bundled in Xbox games, which were even lower down the list, it would be even more in front. So yes, in order to get the headline that vinyl was outselling physical games sold for one of the big gaming consoles, they had to fiddle with the figures and present them in a different way. I guess part of that was to get a more interesting headline, also to have a story that wasn't just music-focused, although this is Setlist. Music is our focus. And actually, in a way, the other stat in the figures put out by ERA that's more interesting to us is that we are now at the point that vinyl is outselling CDs. Because while we knew that was coming, and it looked for a time that that might happen in 2021, that we would get to the point where we were making more money selling vinyl records than selling compact discs, actually in the end last year it didn't happen. CDs were still slightly ahead of vinyl by the end of the year. But unless something massive happens in the next 3 months, we are now very much at the point that vinyl is bringing in loads more cash for the music industry than the sale of good old CDs.
Yeah, so as you said, vinyl revenues are up this year by 12.2%. That's a rise from £72.1 million last year to £80.9 million so far this year. That compares to CDs, which have seen revenues fall by 8.1% year on year from £74.9 million to £68.9 million in the first three quarters of 2021. So therefore, vinyl is £12 million ahead of CDs. So I guess that's a gap that CDs could close, maybe.
I doubt it.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, if it did, that would possibly help ERA, because another reason for focusing on vinyl versus PlayStation games might be that they want everyone to forget what they said at the beginning of this year, which was them trumpeting that CDs had just had their best year since 2015, with the decline in revenues slowing down to 3.9%. In fact, at that point, January this year, ERA was predicting that CDs might be on the verge of a vinyl-style revival, with their fortunes reversing.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a CD revival is really underway. I mean, at one point, about, well, at least six people were predicting a cassette revival, weren't they? So I think people tend to see revivals that aren't really there. And certainly the stats that we are currently seeing do not suggest that the CD revival that maybe we thought might be underway last year when we had some impressive, well, impressive figures last year for CDs, less disappointing than we were expecting figures for CDs last year. That doesn't seem to be a trend that is continuing unless, I mean, as you've already alluded to, it is generally quarter four where the biggest physical sales occur. So maybe everyone's planning on getting a CD player this Christmas. Smart speakers, they're passé, they're a thing of the past. And if everybody gets themselves a CD player, maybe there'll be a last minute surge and we can have another positive CD story at the end of year figures like last time, or maybe we'll be sticking with the ever impressive vinyl revival instead. I suppose the one thing you can say if you're trying to find some optimistic viewpoint on CD sales at the moment is that the decline in the sale of CDs is not at the same extent as a decline in the sale of DVDs, which continue to slump. I mean, that is partly because the decline of DVDs is behind the decline of CDs, isn't it? Because the peak in CDs happened sooner. But anyway, yeah, when it comes to DVDs, they were down, let me see, 19.9% so far this year, which means that we are seeing sales of 66.8 million compared to 83.4 million for the same period last year.
Yeah, and it's particularly bad for DVDs because if you look at the whole of 2021 and you group all console game sales together as one thing, DVDs were the second most popular format last year. Very slightly, they brought in £150.5 million in the whole of 2021 compared to £150.1 million for CDs. But now DVDs have slipped not only below CDs but also below vinyl. So there is quite a fall. And obviously, maybe you're thinking now, well, of course, that's streaming killing all those off. But then Blu-rays are up by 10%. So who knows?
I know it's mainly streaming, but interesting that the Blu-ray is still growing. And yeah, that will, to an extent, be also having an impact on DVD sales overall, I guess.
It's also worth remembering that these are revenue figures. So are as much about the relative costs of different formats as they are about their actual popularity. In these figures, IRRA doesn't give sales numbers for all of the formats, but it does note that so far this year, there have been 15.1 million CDs sold and 16 million DVDs. Vinyl sales, while bringing in more money, will be much lower than that volume-wise.
Yeah, because vinyl's expensive.
Yes, and, you know, while they don't say exactly how many vinyl discs have been sold so far this year, they do say that there have been over 50 million physical disc sales in total. So if we assume that means 50.1 million, that means that there have been 19 million sales of console games, Blu-rays, PC software, which is also in the figures, and vinyl albums combined. So in volume terms, CDs are still right up there.
Yeah, so interesting stat there when we take the price point of these discs into account. Of course, the other thing about these being revenue, they also don't take into account the cost of manufacture and the profits that they have for the music companies on the other side. But I don't know why we're going to such lengths to pick apart IRRA's figures, because I thought they were interesting. And it's good to know that the vinyl revival is continuing. There was a quote from IRRA boss Kim Bailey alongside these stats, because you've always got to have a quote. And she said, "Vinyl's rise of rise seems unstoppable. For a 74-year-old analog format to eclipse the digital age technology of games platforms is quite extraordinary. 10 years into its long climb back to favour, the vinyl revival is most definitely here to stay."
Yeah, well, I mean,
forever, do you think? Do you think she means forever?
Maybe not most definitely here to stay, but it's certainly here. And we can say that for sure.
Just to be clear, that's Andy Malt predicting the end of the vinyl revival in 2023, despite Kim Bailey's optimism. And when he's wrong, when we get these figures in a year's time, we'll all come back to this edition and laugh at Andy's incorrect predictions. That's just what's happened. Just let's make that clear.
Is that what happened?
Definitely. Okay. Most definitely, in fact.
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, Taylor Swift has attempted to block two expert witnesses from testifying and limit the testimony of a third in the upcoming Shake It Off song theft trial. Why? Because these experts lack expertise.
Yeah, she's not the Michael Gove of pop. She's not dissing experts in general. She's not saying, I don't want experts in my life. She's simply saying that these so-called experts are not, in fact, experts. Why? Tell you in a moment. But maybe a very, very quick recap. Although, we won't go into too much detail, don't worry, because we did actually cover this legal battle just a few weeks ago on Setlist with the other recent development in the case. But just as a reminder, this all relates to the US lawsuit being pursued by songwriters Sean Hall and Nathan Butler, who reckon that Swift's 2014 hit Shake It Off rips off their 2001 song called Players Gun Play. The latter song, recorded by FreeLW, includes the lyric, "The players gun play, them haters gonna hate." Meanwhile, Shake It Off, you know, has the line, "The players gonna play, 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 and the haters gonna hate, hate, hate." This case, this song theft lawsuit, has been going through the motions for some time. Taylor Swift's side actually got the case dismissed initially, but it came back. It's all the fault of the Ninth Circuit Appeals Court. And despite numerous efforts on the part of Swiss lawyers to get the whole thing dismissed for a second time, she has failed to do that, which means the whole thing is now heading to trial, which is why we have more updates for you. And basically, what happened last week is that Swift's lawyers submitted new court papers taking issue with some of the expert witnesses that Hall and Butler's team intend to call once the case is properly in court before a jury. And in a bid to have those experts' testimonies either cut back or in some cases cut entirely, the Swiss side in this legal filing questioned, well, either the proposed experts' credentials, basically saying they're not an expert, or certainly not in whatever it is that they are being called to discuss. Or in some cases, they actually cited what these experts have already said in depositions that occurred during the discovery phase in this case, basically saying they got that wrong, that's proof they don't have the expertise. Or in some cases, both of those strategies were employed.
So among the three targeted witnesses is musicologist Lauren Kajikawa. His testimony will focus on the application of the so-called extrinsic test that is usually employed in copyright cases like this one, which Swift's lawyers describe as being the process of assessing the objective similarities of the two works, focusing only on the protectable elements of the plaintiff's expression. However, argue the Swift team, Kajikawa is not qualified, fails to apply the extrinsic test, and instead provides his subjective views. The problem, they say, is that this case centres on lyrics, and Kajikawa has no degree in literature and no training in comparative literary analysis. In fact, they go on, he's not read any books on comparative analysis of lyrics or comparative linguistic analysis, and he does not have any understanding as to the methodology used in the comparative linguistic analysis of two works. He also does not teach literature or poetry and has never written a song or lyrics. They go on to say that Kajikawa, in his role as a professor at George Washington University, primarily studies the dynamics of race and politics, and they say, like the person with a hammer who sees everything as a nail, argues that anyone who doubts the originality of combining a player's gonna play phrase with a haters gonna hate phrase signals an inability or unwillingness to recognize the validity of black vernacular expression. That assertion is not only insulting and baseless, the Swift filing goes on, but irrelevant to the extrinsic test, which, as we've already said, assesses the objective similarities of the two works, focusing only on the protectable elements of the plaintiff's expression, not subjective assertions as to the validity of a claimed source.
So yeah, tell us what you really think. Taylor Swift's lawyers, pretty outspoken there in their bid to diss that particular expert. But can they do better with the next expert that has been lined up by the other side in this dispute? The next expert, whose expertise is being questioned, is there to actually offer an opinion on a very specific question, which is as follows. If the court is to conclude that Shake It Off infringed Players Gonna Play? What portion of the profits from Shake It Off, of which there are many, are attributable to the song's claimed use of the lyrics from the song Players Gonna Play? So basically, this is actually one of two experts who is there to say, okay, if Hall and Butler win, how much of Taylor Swift's money from that track should they get? So the expert lined up to answer that specific question is a lawyer called Bob Kern, and say the Taylor Swift side, while this lawyer may well be an expert on music industry business practices and music licensing, which are topics that he has been called to speak on before in legal cases, he, say they, lacks expertise regarding that specific question I just outlined. In fact, said the Swift side in their legal filing, he plainly is not qualified to provide that or any other opinions he has expressed in this case. And his deposition testimony confirms he is simply making it up as he goes along. They then cite some of what he said in the deposition he gave as part of the discovery phase in the case. I think they're probably being a little bit selective with what he said, but it resulted in a particularly, interesting statement from the Swift side onto why this lawyer should not be allowed to testify in the case. They say, plaintiffs rely on an expert who opines that the allegedly infringed combination of public domain, player and hater phrases is the heart of Players Gonna Play, without which Shake It Off would lose all force, meaning and energy. But that expert, please note this, that expert, they say, is a lawyer who plays no musical instruments and claims expertise because he saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show and, like most if not all of us, sometimes listens to music. So whether or not that's a fair representation of what this lawyer said in his deposition, I don't know. But quite a forthright criticism of this guy's expertise in relation to the question he is being called to answer.
Finally, there is accountant Julie Sates, who is also there to provide an opinion in relation to the Shake It Off profits and what Hall and Butler might be able to claim if they win this case. The Swift side argues that one of her expert opinions in that domain is just wrong. And they also criticise her rebuttal of a report compiled by one of their own experts, Barry Mazarski. On the former point, whether or not one of her opinions is right or not, they say Miss Sates argues that it would be improper to allow a copyright defendant to deduct taxes in calculating the defendant's profits from the alleged infringement, because that would result in double taxation when the copyright plaintiff is taxed on award of profits. Yet, they go on, she admitted, that is just a result of the general principle of the Internal Revenue Code that each taxpayer pays taxes on the income he, she or it receives. Moreover, they go on, Miss Sates' opinion that copyright defendants should not be allowed to deduct taxes in calculating profits is trumped by the established law that they may do so.
So, with all of that in mind, with all of these so-called experts and their lack of expertise, the Swift side concluded in their legal filing last week that the court should exclude the expert opinions, testimony and reports of plaintiff's experts, Mr. Cohn and Professor Kajikawa, and should also exclude Julie Sates' expert opinions, testimony and reports as to specifically the deduction of taxes and this report that the expert for the defence had put together. So they want the first two out completely. The accountant can testify, but not on these two issues. That's what the Swift side is asking for, of course. Well, remains to be seen what the judge overseeing the case says about those demands. Is he too convinced that the experts on the plaintiff's side in this case are not that expert?
Yes, so we shall see if any of these experts make it to court and what they're allowed to say if they do. But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. Do, if you want to read any more about anything we've discussed here, go to the show notes for this episode, which you will find in your podcast player or at setlistpodcast.com. There's links in there to our reports on all of them, so you can go and read those if you just want to keep this party going. Don't forget to subscribe to the show and rate and review the show. And if you've got anything you want to tell us, email us setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.